GNSO translation and transliteration of contact information. Cadogan.
Good morning and welcome to the face-to-face meeting of the Translation and Transliteration of Contact Information Policy Development Process Working Group. I think perhaps if we start by just going round the physical room and then we'll go round the virtual room. So this is that sort of nervous moment in the meeting where they're wondering, is he going to go clockwise or anti-clockwise? Jim, would you like? Should we go anti-clockwise? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim Galvin. I'm here as part of this group from the registry stakeholder group in the GNSO. I also happen to serve as vice chair of the SAC.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Pitinan Kuomon Patana from Thailand. I'm here on the GAC team, so representing government. Thank you.
Thank you.
Patrick Infort, I'm here for IPC.
It's Lars Hoffman from ICANN staff.
Hello, my name is Wen Zhai. I'm from China Organizational Name Administration Center. It's a not-for-profit organization. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Chris Dillon, and I'm one of the co-chairs.
I'm Rudy Vansnik. I'm actually the chair of the PC Policy Committee of the UNPOC and co-chairing with Chris this working group.
Okay, my name is Wanawit Akubutra from Thailand, from the GAC.
Good morning, my name is Rolf Ulrich Knoven. I'm from the Internet Service Providers constituency.
Klaus Stoll, NPOC, and also GNSO counselor, and here as the GNSO liaison for this group.
Good morning, Peter Dernbach from the Intellectual Property Constituency.
Thank you.
Good morning, Jennifer Chung from the Registry Stakeholder Group.
Thank you very much. I'll just have a quick look in the Adobe chat and see if there's anybody in there who isn't in the room. I think we've got Mark Blanchet in the chat. And
Mark is sitting.
Oh, is he sitting behind us? There we are. Yes. Do come forward. And last but not least, and I'm going to struggle to pronounce this, we've got Ubol Tip Sitakaset. I think it's a Thai name. Then just moving into the obligatory next item on the agenda, and that is statements of interest. So we always have to ask whether statements of interest have changed between meetings of the working group. Probably not. And seeing no hands anywhere, we can then safely move into the next agenda item, which is the activities update. And for this, we've got a presentation which is similar to the one that we've given elsewhere. And I think it's probably a good idea to run through this briefly in case there are people here who are less familiar with what we're doing. And it also has one or two relatively recent updates. So can we... thank you very much. Okay, so we have, why are we doing this? And it's very important to consider the general background that this sits within. Basically, continued internationalization of the DNS. So until now, systems like WHOIS, for example, have been either English or ASCII. As the internet internationalizes, then there is a demand for data in other languages, and specifically with a replacement to WHOIS, it is quite likely that future systems will allow Unicode data for contact information. So that's the sort of general background to all of it. Also, a need to allow for standardized query through the various systems. And then there's just this another point here just about the reforms in the directory services we've already touched on it. So there is other work going on in this area, on the reform of the GTLD directory services, and in fact related areas. And at the moment, what we're doing is we have people coming from other groups, and we go and talk to other groups. So there's ongoing communication within this general area. And then certainly the other background is requirements for, exactly what the requirements for the registration data are in various stakeholder groups. So depending on the group, there can be quite different requirements. And that's more or less done that slide. So if we could have the next one, please. Then, more recently, as many of you know, we have been meeting every week on a Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock. That's the time in London. I think it's 1 o'clock UTG. We may want to consider changing that time. I think one of the things I'm intending to do in the near future is poll and say, is this actually the best time to be meeting? Because we haven't looked at that for some time. But anyway, we've been meeting most weeks since December last year. And then eventually we sent out questions to SOs and ACs. Yes, we then relatively recently have done a summary of that in a tool. So basically, we've received responses from many groups, but not all. So the registrars, for example, are noticeably absent from the tool. Also, we have had a lot of quality input from the GAC, particularly from Thailand, mainland China, and the EU. But again, it's quite possible that there are other opinions in that group that we are keen to listen to. Officially, the input for that ended at the end of May, but unofficially we are very much still talking to people, as I mentioned earlier. Again, recently ICANN has published a feasibility study on transformation of contact information. As we were saying before, there are relevant efforts in this area, but we are the only PDP. Okay, so that's more or less that slide. So if we could have the next one. That's all right. As I was saying, we've been reviewing the feedback, we have, during this meeting, provided updates to the GNSO Council. This is actually the public bit of that. And we were invited to the GAC meeting and one of the GAC meetings and presented there as well. I wonder if this is the right time to raise another recent thing. Well, it has to be done sometime. Let's do it now. The suggestion is, which is not in the presentation, that that now could be a very good time to raise to look at the feedback tool and create a straw man, so create some sort of drafting that would address those, address what is the content of that. So I'll just raise that now. Generally speaking, we are at a stage where we are looking for what we really would describe as dogs that haven't barked. It's just really looking for examples like the registrars and some parts of the GAC, even some people outside ICANN could be quite interested in what we're doing. So the example there might be law enforcement. Another thing I might as well raise at this point is the intention, if at all possible, to have a round table with some of the stakeholders, and including perhaps some that have not been very involved so far. And we are requesting that in during the Los Angeles meeting. Okay, next slide, please. And that should be saying any questions. Yes, Jim.
I'm sorry, Jim Galvin. Did you just say that you wanted to meet with law enforcement in Los Angeles? Who did?
No, not necessarily. We are interested in talking to law enforcement at any time. They are a community that may have quite strong views. It may, not necessarily in Los Angeles. In Los Angeles, generally, we want to bring together certainly people within the ICANN community, and not necessarily the ones that have been involved so far. It's more general than that. Thank you. Better.
Better report. Thanks for the summary. I made some notes before that, and I'm afraid that my questions and the need for action are still there. We always mention that there are other groups also dealing with similar issues. And I personally had a feeling that when we go through these issues on the meetings, we say, oh, fantastic. Now we'll have information from that group, and they're waiting for us to make a presentation update. And I guess it's not just we that wait for some more efficient way to deal with these issues. So one proposal I have is, if it's not been yet, if we could have some kind of meeting with the other groups to make sure what are the issues, what are the timelines, and also to make clear for everyone, including myself, what are the specific issues each group are working with. I presume that there will still be some gray zones, and we have to deal with that, but so that each group does an efficient work, and at the same time we don't deal with the same questions. And also, I want to see the action plan we have with a more, as far as possible, a more specific action points. And I think that now we have been dealing with this for half a year. And what we have is, even if it's not replies from each groups of interest, but we have comments, and you have put them together in a summary. And sometimes from my other practice, I know that sometimes it could be hard to get people to make initial comments if they don't can squeeze into what this is about. But now we have actually, or we can prepare a specific paper with the questions and our summary of what we have got in. And if we send that out, I'm pretty sure that we will also get replies from some of those that you haven't heard any from yet. And there can also be some distinctive updates. And from that paper, I think we can move on in a more quicker and specific way.
Thank you. I think there was some very useful feedback there. Perhaps we are to some extent guilty of being ad hoc with the meetings with the other groups. It is quite a complicated matrix, and you know, we can certainly look at doing something more dedicated. I think also possibly going straight into creating some kind of straw man out of the comments, maybe moving too quickly. There's no reason why we can't send out the paper widely first and then move into the straw man.
Well, I want to pick up on your first question. I had the same feeling that there was a bounce back from several groups that have the same topic and are working on the same issue, if I may say, being the WHOIS and the contact information. And I've been talking to Jonathan, chair of GNSO, about this problem, and I still have to draft out the proposal. I propose to have a panel sitting together, being the chairs or co-chairs of each of these groups, so that we could align the work we are doing and avoid doing the same work over and over again without progressing. Because I'm afraid that we are all going in a certain direction, but we don't know which direction that finally is. Is it going to a solution, or is it going to putting other problems on the table? Because at the end, if we come up with recommendations that don't fit in what all other groups are doing, it will make us a little bit stupid. So in order to avoid that, I've proposed to Jonathan that we should try to have a panel that allows us to have all the chairs sitting together and allowing us to make progress in what is finally the best outcome. And I'm still trying to get that done today, and we'll send it around to the group before we get it out.
Excellent.
Wolfgang.
Yes, Wolf Ulrich Norman speaking. Ralph, totally supportive. You know, what we are doing is preparing for a PDP, going through a PDP. So this PDP is embedded in certain rules. So and it's embedded in the procedure about how to deal with. So in as you have seen, so people like me, for example, we couldn't participate every meeting. So it's good that you will talk about the timing of the meeting. For example, it could help us. On the other hand, the interests of the different groups behind us are different. Some have more interest in that, and some just to a certain aspect, so which is reflected in the participation as well. And so, if we have the, if we are of the opinion that there is parallelism to other groups, so. I think nobody is going to hinder us to contact those groups, the chairs of those groups, immediately, as you are suggesting. That's the one thing. On the other hand, you already reported to the GNSO Council on the weekend. So we have to come back to them as well, because they are mandating us. And if we are of the opinion, well, it's going not in the direction we think about, or it's just we cannot move forward. Please help us, give us a mandate, give us a different mandate, or cut it, or what else? Because this discussion has to be put and on that level to the council to make them aware that there is something going wrong. I remember that because at that time when I was on council, so several times we had this issue that people were of the opinion, oh, why should we deal with that in this group as well? Because the other group may cover that aspect. So we have to make clear our mandate, to make clear what we have done. And as far as we have gone, then to report back, nothing else. So don't care about that we, as our group, are not here in the position well to do more. If something is wrong, we try, you do your best to do so, just report that back, and the council, it's up to the council then to discuss that and really to think over the mandate. Thanks.
Thank you, Wolf, Rudy, for the transcript. What strikes me especially is the fact that, and that's maybe something we have to put on the council as a point of discussion, is the fact that the board is requesting some studies to be done on the same topic. And that frightens me, because at the end, if they're launching studies sideways what we are doing, it means that it looks to me as if they don't trust what we do. Because they're asking others, external consultants, that maybe don't know what we are doing, and we didn't even get any contact with this study group or these consultants. So that's maybe a point that we have to bring to the council and ask to bring it to the board and ask for clarification. Why did they launch these studies on the similar issue? So that we have a clarification, why is this done? Is it because there is a lack of trust? Is it because they want to bring other input to us? But it should be clear, because we are volunteers. Those studies are not done on volunteering basis.
This is Lars Hoffman for the record. Rudy, are you referring to the study was just published that Steve Chang presented on 2 or 3 weeks ago? I believe there was part of the initial request by the GNSO Council that there would be a study in parallel with the working group that would inform the work of this group. I have to look at the wording, but I believe that was the case. I'll check and just get back to you.
Yes, I mean, I think it is a complicated matrix. As you know, during our meetings, we have systematically gone through all of the other content that has been produced over the recent months. And yes, occasionally there may be a small amount of overlap, but actually, I feel that we can still, do what the Charter tells us to do, and we can take all of this stuff into account as we draft. So, I think it's not. I feel that it's not the case that something is really doing exactly the same as we are. I mean, we do have advantage, certainly linguistically, that we are coming from various different backgrounds and looking at this. So I think that's one of our fortes, and also that we do meet regularly and we are very systematic, and what we produce is publicly available in and systematically available. Everything we've done is completely open. It's in that wiki. I mean, I feel quite confident about what we've done. That said, perhaps it's not the case that we're just necessarily just going to plod on with that. I mean, we are open to change, but I think we can be confident about what we've done so far. The one area that does concern me, as I mentioned before, is the charge that perhaps we haven't got written input. Ah, yes, we haven't got written input from all of the groups. Very often we've had, people have spoken to us, but effectively when doing this kind of work, you really do need the written input. And that was why earlier I was highlighting the importance of getting that input from other from other players. I feel if we are unable to get that input, it does endanger the timeline. So at the moment, we are hoping to meet the December timeline. I think if we don't meet that timeline, then I think a lot of the worries that were expressed earlier could become much larger.
Rudy speaking. Yes, Lars, it's clear that it was commanded by the GNSO, but maybe we need to go back to the GNSO and ask for clarification on the real reasoning behind it, because it's good to have that sentence, but it's good to know also eventually what I would consider is that this study would have started before we started, in order to enable us to start with good input already.
Thanks, Rudy. Well, the idea was, I believe, that the study obviously can't produce a policy that has to come out of a PDP, but because it's a very technical issue, not the question necessarily whether or not to do translation or transliteration, but how this actually would work and how this could be implemented is something that requires some expertise. That I think the council felt at the time should be explored by an expert study on this, so the group is informed of what can and cannot be done technically. I don't think it's meant to presume any outcome of what the recommendations of this group are, but just to show, if you want, the technical limitations.
May I have the intervention before I have to leave for the GAC? So, to be able to address whether we point out the problems or is that the solution? So, what we try to do is we try to work the problem out rather than guess. So, we have been agreed with the registrar in Thailand that we will conduct the trial on translation, transliteration to see where the problem is. And we were working on like we would distribute the name card. We try to convert not only translation, transliteration, but go for the UPU syntax and how it is affect. Because we start with the Thai language, go to the English, because that also relate to accountabilities and validation, verifications. We try to work the problem out, not guessing where it is, because we try to see that if we want to do the mail verification, validations, how much it's going to cost for the projects. And we bring the post in Thailand working together. We form the groups and we hope, across the finger, that we can come out with the first report back to this before the LA. That when during the time we work, what are the issues that address? Because we try to answer the three questions that who need to do it, at what cost. And I think it's not coming out from study on the paper. We agree to put people in together and work the problem out. In fact, we have a workshop in Korea together with the Korean Post, and UPU also participate in that forums. And we raised the concern on the not only translate, but if we need to go for UPU syntax, how it affects. And if, like we discussed from the working groups, we raised the questions on Han's character between the Korean living in Beijing and how are this being done. I think that the only thing we try to facilitate, to help, to find out what really the problem is.
Thank you very much, Wana. We are very grateful for the amount of work you and your colleagues have put into this area. It is interesting that you raise the UPU, because that does seem to be a very key part of this. I mean, earlier on in our calls, we spoke about, you know, very simple solutions, but the problem is that with the simple so-called simple solutions, you know, they may be unfamiliar to some people. So even if it's simple, you know, so specifically in this case, it would be something like, you know, if it's a name, then use the official English translation, unless it doesn't exist, in which case transliterate it. So that might be the sort of simple approach. However, the UPU offers what I would regard as the reason we shied away from what the UPU is doing is because it is actually a very large collection of systems. But on the other hand, it is all codified and people are very used to using it. So therefore, it becomes very attractive and it is an absolutely key area.
Rudy speaking for the transcript. I'm just wondering, I'm putting it on the table for this group, should we have a closer contact with the UPU and see if what they are doing can help us in giving us guidance in possible solutions? As you say, it's all coded, and indeed there is a clear definition the way they are handling the data. We triggered one sample in the WHOIS with a Chinese domain name, and we ended up in having complete false information in the WHOIS. You remember we did it a few days ago. So,
generally speaking, these things get much easier when you actually try to do things. talking about them is often really, really hard. If you actually do something concrete, suddenly you see things. And the reason I'm now highlighting the UPU is that when there was a mention of the straw man, the first thing I thought was, well, what role does the UPU play in that? And then I thought, we probably need to know more about them, actually.
Thank you, Chris. It's Lars for the record. I'm just wondering, I agree that there's a lot of different players that come into this and that have expertise and strong opinions on this. But I, going back to your first point that, you know, what does the study has to do with this? This is the working group that should make the policy recommendation. I think it might be easier to gather information and feedback and opinion from others, and also to see about feasibility from an initial report. So if the group were to come up with something, even if it doesn't have full consensus, that will certainly draw out comments from those within the group and from outside the group. Initial report essentially is what it is. It's initial report with draft recommendations that do not need consensus. And so that might be a way to facilitate debate with others and to seek their opinions. And also if you have people like law enforcement, they might be much more forthcoming in their views when they see what's on the table, especially if they don't agree, I assume. And the same certainly goes for certain stakeholder groups and constituencies in the GNSO, I believe. Also, the idea of the round table in Los Angeles, although certainly a good one, and you know, talking never harms. Bear in mind that you know this group has been chartered by GNSO to deal with this issue, and so essentially, what the recommendation is of this, the expectation would certainly be that, for example, whatever the outcome may or not, may not be of the EWG, this has still go through a GNSO process, right? I mean, this is even if this goes through in LA and then enters into a PDP, you know, I mean, the best case scenario would be at least 12 months from now, and I think that's a very optimistic view on this. But they would have to take into account the outcome of this working group, essentially, because we make policy on a very small issue that affects the EWG, but, you know, this policy recommendation, if it goes through, whatever it may be, if you want impact on the EWG rather than the other way around. So I think we should try to come to some preliminary recommendations and see where we stand with that. And they will come and whoever disagrees will come and let us know. I'm very certain about that.
Petr, please.
Well, Petr Linford. I agree with that, and sorry if I haven't looked at it for a while now, but what I remember from our agenda, we have a few specific, more detailed points, but otherwise it's just scheduled as our meetings. And if it's possible, and I presume that we can assist in dealing with this by email between now and the next meeting, but to have a more specified issues for the each upcoming meetings, so that we also force ourselves to have specific deadlines for the work, and it will be also more clear what and when we will meet all the deadlines topics. Thanks.
I'm Petinan.
Hi, I'm Petinan for the transcript. I just want to agree with you with the UPU. And actually, from the workshop I had last week, UPU really looking for something like dot post for the next round if it's happening. So there will be someone who really knows about what's going on in the ICANN from UPU. And I can have a reference to that person. Another one is for the, I look in our questions. The last one is the validation and validation, right? So I'm not sure if part of it will be how. How do we translate? From our study locally, we're conducting with the registrar and someone who in charge of the translation for Thai to English in Thailand. So we will come up with how we translate. But that will be only for the Thailand case, and we are quite sure that it's quite different in each country. So that could be in the report, but I really encourage others, members here, to take a look at how to translate for your script as well. For now, I will call with the Korea and maybe the countries around Thailand. Yeah.
Thank you. Jim, please.
Jim Galvin for the transcript. I guess I have a question, and maybe it's directed at the chairs. I'm still struggling to understand what question we want to ask of the UPU and what specific advice we're looking to get from them. And I ask that question because at least the context that I have for this is they have a set of regulations, if you will, that define what, you know, contact information, postal information is supposed to look like. You know, they're understood in spite of the fact that they're rather ambiguous and open-ended. But nonetheless, we know what's there. So that's why, it would be helpful if I just trying to understand exactly what we think we need to get from them and what we're going to ask them. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Yes. The UPU has certainly a lot of information in this area. So it has sort of templates for representing address data. It's obviously done a huge amount of work. I mean, we know from what we've looked at during meetings that it's certainly a major player. And you know, the question is to what extent it is actually a system which is already in a particular context, and it is just in, you know, snail mail, is actually practically answering some of this. That's why it's interesting. The other part to it, I should say, is just that it's such a big system. So because you can send letters, well, more or less anywhere, I think, that is very attractive, because certainly some of the other systems are surprisingly small. So some of the translation and transliteration systems, you know, you're only talking handfuls of languages, well, 75 or something like this. These are very small numbers, whereas I think UPU is a far larger system. So that is the attraction.
Okay, so a follow-up then. I'll offer my perspective on the rules that UPU has. Someone who has looked at this stuff because of other contexts and needing to understand this stuff. I think it boils down to a few things that one could understand. The first thing is that it's a heavily manual system when you come right down to it. It depends a great deal on people. In the end, the only thing that matters is what your local postman's able to do. But from a top down, there's very limited rules that are required. You need the country name needs to be visible in a globally recognized language, which is almost always English, but doesn't have to be. Past that, it's kind of like the DNS. As you get down through levels in the system, entering the country, you know, province, down into the city, they can all have their own rules and do their own thing. And that's the way the system works. The framework that's specified for how addresses look can change as you drop into each level, because they can all have their own rules. As I understand it, there's no actual translation or transliteration that goes on in the system anywhere. You know, you're obligated to present the address in a way that the destination postal person can deal with it. There's really only guidance on what that looks like and fairly accepted ways in which we do that. So at an international level, you sort of have to put a certain amount of information, but not that much. You know, it really just depends on what that end person's going to do with it. And if you know what that is, you just do it. So again, I mean, I just come back to my question. Not that I'm objecting that we bring someone from the UPU to describe this to us, but I'm wondering if we have a more specific question from them, or are we just simply looking for a presentation from them on how the system works?
I think I would say that we need more information about that system. Certainly... for example, a Japanese postman knows what to do with a letter which has been sent to a Japanese address, but in Romanization. So it's actually quite interesting to know how that is, you know, how that is working. I feel of all of the systems that, you know, that is the one which we would do to. It actually sounds as if you have more information about it than we do, and it may be that it's just one of those things that looks attractive at the beginning, and then you get into it and you find problems. It may well be that policy we suggest has a fairly heavily manual element in some areas, that, you know, particularly translation. I think really all I'm saying is that it's such a large system. I would really like to know more about it because I feel that it could inform what we're doing.
Rudy, for the transcript, I think we need to go back to our initial objectives, and it's all about the contact information, which means addresses, and. If I'm correct, the objective is to end up in having correct addresses for the contact information. That's the end goal. If it's in a language that we don't understand, or that a large group doesn't understand or cannot read, we are looking into a mechanism that allows to translate it or transliterate it in a language that is understood. Or am I wrong, Lars?
Well, just to be specific, I think the initial goal is to determine whether contact information data that is put in by a registrant is or is not translated or transliterated. So that does not mean that anybody needs to be able to read it, because then, I mean, so that's the initial hurdle. I think it's almost a black and white issue to start with. Say, should it be done or shouldn't it be done? If it should be done, the group can certainly recommend what should be done. For example, just an example, if a Russian person puts it in, should that be also then transliterated into Urdu? Right? Why should it just be ASCII? That's a question that certainly would come up if it was to be a yes, as a next step. If it is not translated or transliterated, I suppose it would. Then you send, say, registrants put in the data in the language that they would like to. It needs to be verified. And those people who would like to access this, it's up to them then to find a way to translate or transliterate for themselves. It's just important that they be able to access the data in the language or the script that has been put in. So that if I search for a URL in a Chinese top-level domain, I'll be able to get on my computer, on my ASCII computer, the Chinese letters that the person has put in the first place. So I think that the initial black and white, should or shouldn't it be done, is the first hurdle. And then from that follow maybe different questions that the group needs to address afterwards.
So I'll just come back to that very briefly and then go to Jim. So we have the two questions. We have about desirability. You know, should transformation be done at all? That's one question. And then you have this other question. If it should, then how should it be done effectively? The way I feel about it is that an absolute total no is actually quite unlikely to the first question. You know, it should not be done at all. There are people who believe that the NCSG, if I'm correct, their position is fairly close to that. However, most of the time, you might be saying, "Well, there might be a case where they're saying, generally, no, but in particular for special reasons you might want to do it. So what I'm trying to say to you is that the likelihood of us not having to answer the second question, that's really what it is very low. So we will almost certainly have to answer the second question about, you know, translation or transliteration or conceivably even something else. Tagging may be involved, for example. So therefore, I feel we can answer the two at the same time, because the likelihood of not having to answer that second question is very low.
I see a queue. Jim was first.
I will yield to my colleague in the corner. I believe she had her hand up before me, and then I'll go after her.
Okay. Please use this.
Thank you. So this is Izumi Okutani from JPNIC. Just to introduce what we do, we run our own WHOIS and for IP address for our community within Japan. And related to the issue of our translation, maybe a little bit preliminary to go into the details of discussions, to what extent we're going to go to the translation, but we might want to also identify whether we also translate the content or just simply the field, so that people know, you know, what are the contents of the information, but and they can just like look into it and do the translation themselves about the contents. That's one thing that I want to flag as a possible consideration. And the second point, going back a little bit earlier about the discussions as a reference for the UPU, maybe this is already looked into, but I think a lot of the CCTLDs, they run their own WHOIS and probably supporting their own language, so that might be something that we want to look into as a reference.
Thank you. Most of the time in the group, we have been talking about content, not fields, but I've made a note of that. Yeah, we need to think about fields as well. Existing other WHOIS systems, we've touched on them, but that's probably another area we need to look at in more detail. Thank you.
I have Peter in the queue.
So, Jim Galvin, I have to admit I'm becoming even more confused here now as we move along. We've tried to say a couple of times what question that we're answering, and I was at first I was agreeing with Lars, but I wanted to shape it a little differently, and after some responses, I'm actually a little confused, and I'd appreciate some clarity on this point here. I thought that we had two questions that we're answering in this working group. The first one being, should there be a single universal language or script used for registration data? And the answer to that will necessarily affect the answer to the second question, which is, should there be transformations? And then the important part of should there be transformations is who should bear the burden of that cost? So I thought our real focus here as a primary step is whether or not information in the system, for the entire system, meaning from a registrant, right, through the registrar to the registry and out the directory service, should be in a single language and script or not. And, I mean, if we say no, then that certainly affects what we're going to say about transformations in the second question. If we say yes, then there's a very significant question that we have to answer in the second one. That's my characterization of the two questions that we're answering, but I haven't heard you say it in that way, and so I'd appreciate some clarity on what we're doing. Thank you.
So Jim, regarding your first question, should it be in a... sorry, for the transcript, this is Steve Shang from ICANN staff. The original RRD group looked into this issue, and what I think in the report it says, we need to balance the capacity of the users submitting the data, right? That's one of the primary motivations for internationalizing these things. And therefore, users should be able to submit registration data in their own language and encode it in a script. Now that's a decision. It's a working group decision that has not probably gone through a PDP. So maybe this PDP, the PDP working group would want to rectify that, or you could disagree with the original IRD conclusion. So that's something I think Lars can provide some guidance here, and I also want to plug in that we did look into the registry practices. We did a report looking survey of how registries and registrars are currently handling internationalized registration data. And that's documented in a report that we published for public comment. And I think Mark here is one of the lead authors for that, also presented to this group. So I think that's a useful information point to take into consideration. Thanks.
It's Lars. Just to that very point, yes, agree obviously with what Steve just said. And in fact, if you read the first charter question, it assumes that very fact that registrants can or should put in the Whois data or the registration data in their own script. It says whether it is desirable to translate contact information into a single script. So therefore, assuming that it's put into different scripts, and then whether or not it should be then translated into a single one.
Well, listen to these different steps we have to go through. Then I can say shortly that we have actually done the first step, and the short and clear conclusion is that, is there a need? Yes, if it's possible. And from that we can move forward.
I'm sorry, just a quick yes, what is possible? Could you expand on your antecedents there so we're clear on the statement you're making, saying yes to?
I listened to both versions of the initial question, but it was, is there a need? And there was some differences, but is there a need for transliteration? And I would say yes, if it's possible, and then we can move forward and see in what way.
Okay, so Jim again. So, but my concern is I don't think that's the first question. Okay, the first question is there going to be a single language or script? And
yes, if it's possible.
Okay, that's what your it is. All right, thank you.
And this is Peter Dermark for the transcript. I actually think the first question is it desirable for there to be either a single language or a common script? So I think that the first question is it desirable?
That's just the next
to
slide.
Which I heard Petter's response is, yes, it's desirable. But now we have to look at whether or not it's possible, which informs the second question. And the second question is not who bears the burden or which system is best, but who decides who bears the burden. That's what I understood to be our two questions.
I've asked Rudy for the transcript. I've asked to put on the charter to give it a clear definition. It's very clear what is mentioned there. It's whether it is desirable to translate contact information to a single common language or transliterate contact information to a single common script. I think the question cannot be clearer than this one.
Yeah. Yes. I think from now on we have to be very careful with these two questions. We probably need to have a slide in every meeting because it's very easy to sort of paraphrase them. Now, I would like to answer Petter's point The input we have in the review tool is very mixed on this question, so it is certainly not a straight yes. Certainly not.
I have to run, so I like to have my perspective on two issues. I think when we start up with this question, so we really study, and in Thailand we find out that only 20% file the domain with the local ccTLD. And we just think that, hey, if GTLD is all over the place, how the Thai person provide the contact information in Thai into the system in US or in somewhere else in all over the world? And will this affect that the registrar or the registry will limit to the local boundaries only? That's how we start to work. That how could we create the competitions or enable the registrant to be able to file something anywhere, which the registrar might have the accountabilities and verification required. So how could they verify the Thai scripts language for that's what we do see in the initial beginning when we study. That's why we try to help that if we need to to script it into the English, that how we're going to do it, and is it required to have the standardization helping to be sure that the information provided are correct and is open up the way that the registration process of the domain still remain the same as it used to be in the old times. And that the origin when we start off. And the secondly, on my perspective on UPU is because if you want to do the verification, the post is the means of doing that very effectively. And I do see that there are a lot of manual issues involved. They have their own local syntax. But the UPU also been adopted and discussed in the expert working group in UNC FACS, which relate to trade facilitations. They are in the revisions process of changing that. They have the work that they call, I don't want to go into it, but they call core component libraries that every country have to use when they do this kind of international trades. And address is one of the chapter, including juristic persons or a person, individual. So I think the movement for have a common scripts in English and a common syntax standardization is leading to that way. I remember Rudy's mentioned about that should we look into the other works, and I just confirmed I get back from Geneva. The expert working groups there look into how to adopt the UPU in the trade facilitation chapters. So that additional information.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, but thank you very much for that input. Yes, those who say that it is not desirable tend to use cost as the reason for that often.
Really for the transcript, but that's an answer to the second question. So I think we need first to stick to the first question and decide if it is desirable. I think that's where we need a final decision, because if it's not desirable, the second question is even not worth to discuss. So it is the first question. Is it desirable? Yes or no? Yes?
I have 3 points I want to mention. My name is Wen from China. For the first point, translation and transliteration, I used to be a Chinese teacher for international students in China. On this, it reminded me of when I was talking with my international students in China, when they're trying to find places with Chinese names and Chinese road addresses, they find huge frustrations when they try to ask for for directions when they are using translation, like north, south, west, east, especially. Because all those people they are asking about are just common people on the street. They're not that highly bilingual or trilingual. So from my own perspective, it would be highly more helpful to be transliterate addresses than translation. Another point is I heard that there are test studies in Thailand and Korea and or Japan, but not in China. So I would try to contribute more. And also there's a colleague who's regretfully can't be present today. I'm sure he would be like to together with me to promote some of the studies in China. If you need any contact with the China organizations, we would try to do that, although we can't promise anything. Another point is just considering the ICANN strategy overall. I remember they published something helping the underserved regions in the world about internet. So who should burden the fees of the transliteration? I'm wondering if this PDP will go into the direction of actually considering in two aspects, like developed countries registrars and registries and developing countries registrars and registries. I remember in that report they mentioned something like asking for volunteers or something from developed countries to mentoring registrars and registries in developing countries. If there are surely some volunteers from those big companies, that might actually help solve part of the problem. And another point is who should decide what language or common language it should be translated into. I think it is a fair way to discuss this issue, but I think it's in the charter of this working group. It's a common sign that English is actually the most commonly used language. So if we put English and into a vote, if majority wins that, maybe that will faster move this process faster. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Just to pick up some points from that, certainly the sort of simple system that we have on occasion spoken about during our meetings would very much have been talking about the transliteration of addresses, then the translation of organizational names if there are official translations, but then transliteration if there aren't. So that's the very simple system. But when you look at individual cases, you will find particularly famous streets do tend to have English versions. And so using that very simple system of ours with only transliteration, you're effectively ignoring that. But the locals will, the local people will understand that. You raised the issue of developing countries, and I think those who say that it is not desirable to transform, those are often people who are concerned about developing countries and the costs that transformation could impose on them. So that is something if you read the document, you'll find that comes out quite clearly in there. As regards the which common language, really the common language is very likely to be English. The common script would be some version of probably ASCII with, actually it isn't ASCII at that stage, it's going to be the Roman alphabet, but with some diacritics on occasion. There is also, if you go into some of the documents, mentioning of pivoting, whereby it might be possible to transcribe from Chinese into English, and then to pivot the Romanized English into Cyrillic or into Greek or something like that automatically. So again, if you read the documentation, that is also an idea that comes up.
Sorry that I haven't been following this working group very closely, but that's just something that came into my mind during this meeting. Sorry.
They're interesting points. Thank you.
Thank you. It's Lars for the record. Back onto the desirabilities. Actually, something I didn't catch a name that what you said earlier about the fields. So the desirability... you know, that's the first starting point. And so if the group thinks, why is it desirable to translate or transliterate, it's surely contactability, right? So that law enforcement, IPC, internet users can contact the person that has registered a name. Now, if I'm somebody in Sri Lanka and I put it in a Sri Lankan script, the chances are that I don't speak English. That's why I put it in the first place in any case, the chance I don't speak English. So if you wanted to contact me and you write me an English email or any other language than my own, I won't be able to answer. So that is where the fields would come in. So if I want to contact somebody who put in a script in their own language, be it translated or not, the key is that I know what the email address is, what the street is, and what the other information is. And whether it's in the original script or in English is almost secondary, because the person will only speak, most likely, that language that they speak. If I'm the police and I want to knock on their door, if I have the Chinese script of an address or a translation into English, once I go to that street, my guess is that I will go with the Chinese script and find somebody who can point me to the address rather than somebody translated somewhere. So I think, is it desirable? If you want to, of course it's a good idea. It's great to just be able to see it. But I think desirability comes with necessity. Like, why would we want to do this? And that's contactability. And there we only really need, if you want, the fields themselves to be translated. So we know which one is the street, which one is the name, and which one is the email address. And after that, I suspect that as a lawyer, you probably will want to do the translation yourself. And as the police, you will want to do the translation yourself and not rely on a third party. I'm just putting that out there from the field translation, which would make the job of the working group a lot easier as an added benefit.
Thank you for that. Just before going to Jim, let me just say... reading the input tool, the thought crossed my mind that there may have been a misunderstanding when people said it is not desirable. That's what some people said in the input tool. There is no doubt about that. Perhaps, I mean, there is almost an idea that what they were saying is... it's not desirable because it would be very expensive, but that was the thing driving it, you see. But that is not what they wrote. So if we want to pursue that one, we would need to get back. And it may be stretching that point anyway. I think they were writing, it is not desirable, unfortunately.
Tony?
Jim next, and then here. Yes, here. Yes, please.
Jim Galvin for the transcript. If we go back to what the Directory Services Expert Working Group did, right, its work was driven in large part by defining purposes for registration data. So to the extent that we want to answer this question in the same context, I think that that's interesting, but it does require, I think, additional work on our part to make sure that we understand those purposes and that we don't make assumptions that we actually have some real facts to consider it as to the purpose of translation and transliteration in the purpose categories that the Directory Services Expert Working Group has put up there. So since we've been using law enforcement as an example, I'll just go down the path and offer the following comment. If the goal here is that the contact data be useful for its intended purpose, which is operationally that it represents a postal address that will result in a delivery to some physical destination, I think that you could make a very strong case for saying, no, I don't want to translate or transliterate it or transform it in any way, because presumably I'm a registrant. I know how to put my address in so that it's going to get to me. And I should simply take that on board. That's what should be in the system. And then anybody who wants it asks for it, and they get it out the door, and that's what you put on an envelope, and it works. If you do anything else to it, you risk it not working. And if you go looking as the detailed study that ICANN had commissioned on translation and transliteration solutions for doing that, one of the things that they emphasize is if you want reliability in transformations, then there is some additional information that you have to be careful about. You do need the language and script tagging, but you also need context tagging. You need to know what it is that you're dealing with in order to reliably do transformations. And so that becomes a part of this puzzle, too, in an operational context. So anyway, I guess my main point in that is just that however we're going to answer this question, if we're going to answer it in the context of purpose, I think that's interesting. But if we're just going to answer it in another context, let's make that decision too. And then as a final comment, I apologize, but I am going to have to duck out of here in just a few minutes. I have a presentation at 10 o'clock, and I don't want to be late for that. So, thank you.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, James, for this input. But I want to pick up on what you were bringing to the table, and probably that's a more detailed technical issue that we need to consider later on. When you say we have to consider if it's translated or not, I would rather say, do we have to look into the fact that the data should contain data fields that allow us to have both languages in the system, rather than having only one contact data field? And that's one of the aspects that is yet, for me, not clear, and makes our decision quite difficult. If you have the possibility to have a field for the native language and a field, as we say, for the single common language, then we have a solution, because then you can, for let's say the native language, use XML tag in order to define which language it is, and that can solve quite a lot of problems. Anyhow, it's still something we need to explore, I think.
Just a quick follow-up. Yes, I mean, in the solutions document about translation and transliteration, one of the observations they make, too, is if you transform the data, you should keep track of that. You need to know that you're no longer looking at the original data, that it was transformed, and you should, in fact, keep track of the changes that you've made to it. And so an implementation question, once we get past our questions of what we're answering here, is, if it is going to be transformed, should there be obligations on maintaining each of those transformations and logging, you know, what algorithm used for transformations and that kind of thing too? But I think that's a second order question, not a first order question. Thanks.
I think the next question was Tenny.
Izumi,
actually. Oh, was it Izumi? Sorry, I've got the wrong order.
You have the mic.
It doesn't matter.
You can use the mic, yeah.
Okay. So this is Izumi speaking again. I think the point that last is made was very interesting, because this is exactly the kind of issue that we're facing with Ahuas. We provide information in both Japanese and English, so the people from overseas are able to find information to contact our Japanese networks. But so that would sort of create expectations that you are able to, the person on the phone are able to speak English. But in reality, it's not. So we want to look into what kind of the purpose that we want. So do we want the meaningful way of providing information, or we just simply want to be, you know, the contact information to be visible? So one pro that I can see of just translating the field and not translating the contents is it doesn't build expectations that, okay, people can speak the language, the English. So maybe the people who contact law enforcement or whoever would be prepared to have somebody who speak the language in that local registered information. So I just want to share our situation.
Thank you very much for that. Tony, would you...
Scrambling to finish my notes. Tony Harris from the ISPCP constituency. I was involved with WHIS since 2001, believe it or not, when we had the first real big working group, and actually ICANN did a survey with 3,500 responses from the community at large, with a whole set of questions on the use and usefulness of WHIS, which was quite interesting, actually. And after years and years and years of debate, you always come back to the same point. The registrars do not make enough margin to have any type of cost associated to checking information or to transliterating or to do anything with it. So that will be opposed by them for legitimate reasons, for market reasons, as long as we live. I think one possible solution, it's probably very basic, and I'm sorry I wasn't in the, people have probably already covered this, I arrived late. But you could have, when somebody registers a domain name, you could have a pull-up, like you have in many websites when you want to book something or an air ticket or whatever. You select a language in which you're going to fill in the information. So pull-up could open up, you know, multiple languages, the same field of data that you have to fill in to, when you're a registrant. That doesn't set any costs on the registrar at all. And similarly, when I don't see the value in transliterating, because who would want to seek contact information in a WHIS database? It would be basically, I think the major groups would be people who want to know who has the name, because that should be mine. I have brand rights, or you know, I want that name because I've just developed a product and I need it. So how can I get in touch with this guy and buy it from him, or send a lawyer and put him in jail or whatever it is? That's one group, and the other would be when there's cyber piracy or malpractices. Then law enforcement go everywhere they can to find out where they can get to the source of the problem. So if it's in Chinese or Arabic or whatever, I mean, all these organizations usually have worldwide reach. If it's law enforcement, they can do it through Interpol. If it's anything to do with legal questions, normally they have a worldwide network of IP lawyers and organizations that can do that. So that's probably one way you could do it, and basically, I mean, as far as registrars are concerned, you can register a name in Chinese or in English, or you could register a name in any language, or an address and contact data. Registrar doesn't care. You could say, "I'm Napoleon Bonaparte. I live on the island of Elba, and my address is Rock Number 4," and oh, they're going to say, "Well, put your credit card in it. The name's free, your credit card checks, it's yours." And that they don't care. I mean they don't have the time or the money to look at your contact information. So that's a fact of life, and there's nothing wrong with it. That's the way the business is handled. So that would be my comment. And I'm sorry if you've already covered these things. I just thought I'd mention them.
Thank you very much. In fact, there hasn't been official input from the registrars, but we've an idea what they think on these subjects. Now, next one I think is better, please.
Well, I know that the official description is contact information, but I would say that the what you really want to see when you look at the more general internationally translation is information. So, I mean, yes, this is contact information, but it's used for identification information more. And as you say, whether it's Interpol or a single company with one person that needs to know for any reason, legal reason, the information, that company doesn't have that money to bring all these huge law firms. So it must be available for each one to identify. And I like the system when we could have, if it's possible, to have the official address that is legally binding in the local language. And then the additional version that is more of identification information that is globally. Whether it's Donald Duck, but at least it's searchable to see, okay, it's the same person that holds these domain names.
Thank you for that. We are starting to run out of time, so I think the next person is Wolf. Okay, then Steve, if you'd like to.
Thank you. This is Steve for the transcript. Just following along Lars and Tony's point, in the original IRD report, because knowing that some of this issue needs to go through a policy process, what an interim effort they recommended is have the contact information in one's local language and script, but in addition of that, have a language tag for indicate, so for the consumers of the data who wants to do the transformation can at least do it themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that needs to be some check by the technical experts here, you know, how feasible is that? Because for address, there's more than one language, you know, in many cases there's a mixed language or script issues, so how to tag that. But I think it doesn't have to be all or none, you know. You could tag it and then for the consumer to do it, or you could even ask the registrar to say on demand, if there's a request that needs this address needs to be transformed, you know, the registrar can do that. You know, those are the more options there. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think there was one last question.
Just a comment, and it's Jennifer Chung for the record. And I've heard opinions and suggestions about using perhaps maybe the field translating the field instead of the actual information. I think Jim mentioned before that, you know, we need to remember the purpose of providing this contact information is to identify people, identify, you know, the person who registered the domain. So having that in consideration, having to look at, you know, maybe we can look into just a field or even the tagging technical aspects, that would be very, I think, helpful. And it would also answer a lot of the confusion for the first question. I see that in our table, even though Petter mentioned before it was a definitive yes, it's actually very mixed reaction. And I think that might help or might allow other groups to decide it would be desirable, it would be beneficial to do this transformation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. We will certainly be revisiting fields. We've now timed out. Let me just say before we close the meeting, thank you very much for coming. Next week, Thursday, 13 o'clock UTG, will be cancelled to let us just catch up with things, and we'll start off as usual the week after. Thank you very much.
I'll send out a doodle poll in the meantime also to reconfirm the timing.
And I would
thank you very much indeed.
We start producing this interim report as a sample of what direction we want to go, especially having this initial question on the table. I think it's important that we start having a consensus on whether it is desirable, yes or no, because that's the stop or go.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.